It is fear that gives the drug war life.
We have much more of this summer reading assignment about my book on the latest Cultural Baggage Show. This is Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
It's now time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own programs. This airtime is a free service for KPFT listener members, offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge and talent with other listeners. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed on Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now, it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, here on 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Open Journal. We thank you for joining us today. This is Ken Kenegas, president of Healthcare for All Texas. I'm a registered nurse with 40 years of experience in the U.S. healthcare system. With me is Dr. Peg Nosek, executive director of the Center for Research on Women and Disabilities and a professor in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at Baylor College of Medicine, and the immediate past president of Healthcare for All Texas. The myth we are debunking today is that Canadians and their doctors come to the U.S. in droves because they don't like Canada's healthcare system. Our guest today is Dr. Cody Hendry, an American-born and trained family physician who, after many years of practice in community health centers in Oakland, California, moved to British Columbia in 1994. There, Dr. Hendry works in a group family practice, heads the local hospital department of family practice, and is active in the provincial medical committee. Call us at 713-526-5738 with your questions and comments.
We want to thank KPFT for giving us Healthcare for All Texas the opportunity to have a monthly Open Journal show on healthcare reform. We'll be here every second Wednesday of the month for the rest of the year, discussing with you the need to go beyond the Affordable Care Act to a single-payer health care system. A key question for listeners to consider, as always, is the following. What do health insurance companies do for our health care system that cannot be done without them? Keep in mind, every other industrialized country has some form of national health program that severely limits the role of health insurance companies. Well, we'd like to say hello to Dr. Hendry. Thank you for being with us today. Could you start by talking to us and our listeners about your experience as a family physician with the U.S. and the Canadian systems? I know that you have quite a lot to talk to us about today. We'd like to have you answer some questions about your experiences as a physician in Canada and how the system works for you up there and for your patients.
Thank you. I'm happy to have this opportunity to do that. Thanks for asking me. For starters, I would guess I'd just say that I did spend quite a bit of time working in the U.S. As Ken had mentioned, I was trained there and worked in primarily community health centers in Oakland, California for over 20 years and had experience with people who had very little access to health care, as well as working through the managed care companies. And I was in a position of administration for a fair amount of time as a medical director. So I got very involved in the U.S. health system before I moved to Canada in 2004. So I have a lot to contrast to what my current experience is. So 10 years ago, I started working here, and I'm working in a practice with other family doctors and seeing patients. And the thing that really has impressed me is how much easier and simpler everything is working here in Canada, and how much better really it is both for the patients and for the doctors and the healthcare workers. But I'll elaborate on that a little bit. One of the things that I find is that people really have a lot of misperceptions about what a single-payer system is and what the Canadian health system is. I work in British Columbia, and that's one of the provinces which is analogous to the states. So just as in the states, each province has a slightly different system, but we're all in a single-payer system, and what that means basically is that it's easy. We're all in, you might think of it as the same health plan. We call it Medicare, which people should be able to relate to fairly easily in the states. So we're all in this one health plan, Medicare. So that means all the patients I see have the same benefits. The fee structure is the same for the doctors. All the bills just go to one place. And I don't work for the government. They don't tell me how to run my practice. They don't tell me what to do. What they do is they provide the health plan, and I bill them for the services that I do. So I have freedom to run my practice as I will. The patients have a freedom to go where they want. They aren't bound by who's in which health plan, because everyone's in the same health plan. I'm not bound as to who I refer to, because everyone, again, is in the same health plan. And it's just, it's simple. You might just contrast it to whatever experience you have with your own health plan, or trying to get one. But if you're a patient in my office, people come in, my receptionist says, "Hi, John or Joe or whatever it happens to be, have a seat." I see them, they leave, they say goodbye, they make an appointment, that's it. I mean, really, they don't have to fill out forms, they don't have to have a copay, they don't have to figure out which lab to go to, or which medicines are going to be covered, or which doctor they can be referred to. None of that. It's very simple. And if they have to go to the lab or they have to go to the hospital, they bring their card, they go, they get taken care of, they leave. That's it.
So are you saying that if someone shows up on your door bleeding, the first question is not, "What's your health insurance?"
Absolutely not. How you doing?
Well, how can that be?
How you doing, Joe?
or you mean you actually say, "Where does it hurt?"
They don't even look at the card most of the time because, that's your doctor. They know who you are. You live in the community. You haven't moved away. You're eligible, So they have your number because it's already in the system. They don't need more than that. They might ask you if you moved or something, but only if you bother. They probably know because you live down the street. But anyway,
Well, then, could you address the question of waiting lists? Because that's one of the biggest myths. The first thing anybody says when you mention Canada is they say, "Oh, yes, but you have to wait months to see a physician."
But first, we're live on KPFT 90.1. This is Open Journal with Ken Kenegas, Dr. Peg Nosek, and our guest, Dr. Connie Henry. We're talking about single-payer health care in Canada and how it compares to health care in the U.S. Please call us at 713-526-5738 with your questions.
So going back to the question now about waiting times, could you address that?
Sure. I like to think of it more as whether people get access to care that they need, and think about this in an overall context. In Canada, I think we have a situation where there is both less under-treatment and less over-treatment. In other words, if you need care, you get it, but you don't get as much unnecessary care as you might get in other circumstances, and you don't have the same inequities. So, for example, for emergency care, there's no waiting for emergency care other than if you have to wait in the ER, like anyone often have to do. In our particular ER, I think we're pretty good. But if I have someone who comes in and I think they have like a broken bone or something, off they go to the emergency room. They get seen. There's an orthopedist on 24 hours a day. If I want to, I can call them up and talk to them before I send them to the emergency room and say, "Do you think I really need to send them? And, should we send them straight through the x-ray or whatever?" Same thing for, a cardiac emergency or if you need to be hospitalized. There's no waiting. We see people right away in terms of seeing people in the doctor's office. It kind of depends on how efficient your office is, but, basically, there is access. People aren't avoiding care because they're going to end up with a big bill or because it's not in their health plan or, you know, they're worried about it for that reason. That being said, does everyone have immediate access to elective surgery? That means stuff that doesn't have to be done right away, but it's something that should be done. People point to things like knee replacements or cataracts. Those things don't develop overnight. They don't get cured overnight. Yeah, people do wait. It varies. And so they scream about that, which is good because it means that people are really engaged in their health care in terms of trying to improve things. So they've had a number of people aware of issues, so they've had a number of programs to try to address wait times. So in Alberta, for example, they have a whole bone and joint program that they developed to try to coordinate, you know, who's available, what the wait times are, how do we prioritize people, so that they drastically cut the wait times down. And a similar thing's happening in British Columbia, where they're developing databases so that the family doctors will know at any given time which specialists are where, what kind of stuff do they do, what are the relative wait times, and how can they get the patient in quickly. So a lot of it has to do with organizing your health system better and working together and dealing with the things that are elective in a better way. But for the emergency stuff, people actually have great access. In fact, when I was working in the States, I had a harder time getting people into specialists and getting taken care of if they didn't have the right insurance than I have had in Canada.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out what you're saying there also is that because it's all one system, it's easier to address systemic problems. I mean, here you don't even have the data on what's going on because they are all the data is in different private insurance companies. Nobody knows what's really happening. But in Canada, you have the ability to look at a problem and really, you know, have all the information. Is that how you see it?
I think being in one system really does give you an advantage there if you're trying to bring together all the parties and say, how can we make things better? I would say that health data, generally speaking, isn't the easiest thing to gather, but it is much easier in a single system than it is when you have everything divided up. So we have a number of programs that I've been participating in that I find quite inspiring because they bring together the components of community health and things that the health authority does, which have to do with, you know, public health or outpatient services, and the family doctors that are delivering the medical care. And we can get together and figure out how do we collaborate better to make sure that people get all the services that they need. You know, I like to compare it to a situation where I was working in trying to get diabetes care together in the States, and every program had its own separate services, and you would qualify for one or the other depending on which plan you were in. And I thought, well, why can't we just have a service and then pool that and have people always eligible to get what they need and not break it up? And I came up here to Canada, and they said, well, you know, how do you do things up here? And they said, oh, well, you know, you just go to your local diabetes nurse and, you know, done. It was just done. It wasn't hard. And if you want to change the system or you want to work with people, you are all in one system, and you have that opportunity to make a change on a broader scale than just in your one little piece of the puzzle.
We have a caller. Let's take a question from Kira.
Hi, I was wondering who decides what medical benefits are included in the health system. I know here people seem to be worried with single payer that they would need a certain medical procedure or drug, but it wouldn't be included. So how does Canada or British Columbia decide what gets included in the national or the single payer plans?
Well, the health plan in Canada is kind of like your traditional medical plan. In other words, it covers doctor visits, it covers hospital care, it covers laboratory services and inpatient medications right off the bat. It doesn't cover things like, say, dental or some other outpatient things. So it's like a regular medical plan. What is considered covered is all necessary medical services. So it's pretty broadly interpreted. I think pretty much everything is covered except things that are considered experimental. So, you know, you're going to get things that will be on the cutting edge, so to speak, of new treatments that maybe haven't been fully fleshed out. And those things you might need to make an appeal to about whether or not that's going to be covered. But the, you know, vast majority of everything that people need that's considered medically necessary is automatically covered. I haven't had anything that I have... I can't think of a time when someone has been denied coverage because they've needed something that was kind of out there on the fringe. You know, they get their cancer treatments and they get their surgeries and so on. It's possible that the cancer treatments that people are getting, there might be something that is a new thing that they're still debating whether they're covering or not. But it's pretty, it's definitely a tiny minority of the procedures.
So who decides, though, how is it set up to make decisions about what's included?
Well, each province has a Ministry of Health, and they're the ones that will determine that.
Oh, okay.
This is Healthcare for All Texas, an open journal on KPFT with Ken Kenningus, Dr. Peg Nosek, and our guest, Dr. Connie Henry. We are talking about Canadian healthcare. Call us at 713-526-5738. We'll be right back.
This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. The time is 9:46. Here is a traffic and weather update. On 45, the North Freeway in the HOV lane, inbound at Airline Drive, there is a stalled vehicle. And on the 610 West Loop, southbound from Shepherd to I-10, the travel time is just over 8 minutes. And so those are the only very slow areas. Current temperature is 84 degrees. Skies are partly cloudy. Humidity is 70%. And today's forecast for Harris County, partly cloudy with a high of 99 and a low of 77 degrees. Please stay tuned after the community spotlight for Bird Note, followed by Wide Open Spaces at 10 o'clock, and then at 1 o'clock, Heartbeat. And now back to the community spotlight. Healthcare reform, and they're talking about Canadian healthcare.
Healthcare for All Texas meets the second Thursday of each month at St. Paul's United Methodist Church at 5501 Main Street in Houston in the Jones Building on the second floor in the Fondren Lounge. That meeting is tomorrow night at 6:30. We hope to see you there.
Now, we also want to tell our listeners about a wonderful play that will be coming to Texas in the spring of 2015 with the assistance of Healthcare for All Texas. It's called Mercy Killers. A man is caught in a life-death struggle with the healthcare system, a story as American as apple pie. You can help bring Mercy Killers to your area of Texas, especially if you're listening in some other place over the Internet, or help with performances arranged in Houston. Contact us at info@hcfat.org. Dr. Hendry, you want to continue with the discussion?
We were talking about the access to certain things such as particular drugs. Dr. Hendry, I would like to ask you, in the case of people with complex conditions, people who need some extraordinary care, could you talk about how that works in the Canadian system?
Are you talking about community care? Maybe you could just give me a quick example so I can understand better.
Well, I have a disability, so I'm very attuned to people with disabilities who need durable medical equipment, who may need certain types of therapies at certain points, or people who have had accidents and need to go through rehabilitation, for example, comprehensive rehabilitation, or people who have complex chronic conditions, indeed, an array of specialists. People have more complex care than ordinary community health care needs.
Right. So they have specialty centers that will be available for things like complex rehabilitation needs. I live in a relatively smaller community, and so in my area, people would go to Vancouver if they needed that kind of rehabilitation. So, for example, someone who's had a severe bike accident and has a C4 quadriplegia or something like that, they would go to Vancouver, and then they would spend time in the rehabilitation centers there, and then they would qualify for various services after they are discharged, assuming they can get home. Now, how all of that gets paid for as an ongoing needs is a little more complicated. It's not the straight-up medically necessary care, because you end up with things like the durable equipment and people to help out in the home and stuff like that. So that will in part depend on what your financial status is and whether you have access to other disability insurances or things like that that might help pay for some of those things. Certainly when you're in the hospital, everything is covered, but when you get out, then some of those adjustments, you need to go through a variety of programs to get the one that works out best for you. But I know of several people who've had quite extensive rehabilitation requirements who have had that all paid for, in terms of the in-hospital rehabilitation stuff. There are various programs that exist in different communities which are available. So you kind of have to take it case by case. But it's not a, well, just to go back to the case I had mentioned, there was actually a physician in our community who did have that bicycle accident and spent many, many months in Vancouver, and all of that has been paid for.
Wow, amazing. What about the situation of immigrants? Are they covered?
Immigrants, it depends on your status. It's kind of a prickly question at the moment. If you are here legally, if you've been here for 3 months, then you will qualify for the health plan. We don't have the same situation in Canada that we do in the U.S. in terms of having a lot of people who are undocumented, and the current government is trying to make some changes and in what is covered or not and who can qualify. That was recently taken to court and found to be not appropriate, so essentially we're fighting to try to make sure that people who are here in Canada can get coverage appropriately if they are in certain immigrant categories. But essentially, once you've been here for 3 months, assuming you have any kind of status, there's not an issue whatsoever. You're automatically in.
Well, we're live on KPFT 90.1 FM, and you can also listen to this show archived at the website, kpft.org. This is Open Journal with Ken Kenegas, Dr. Peg Nosek, and our guest, Dr. Cody Henry, talking about healthcare in the U.S. and Canada. Please call us at 713-526-5738.
Another myth that is repeated ad nauseum by the opposition is that physicians are coming in droves from Canada to the U.S. because they just can't stand to work in that system. Is that true or false?
That's a really good question. There's no evidence to support that that's the case. It has been looked at, actually. They did a study with the Canadian Institute of Health, and it looks as if the maximum number they had was back in the mid-90s, and it's been declining ever since. So at one point, they estimated that there were maybe 400 or 500 doctors from Canada who had come to the U.S. in that year, but it was going, the last time they were able to get the numbers was back in 2006, and there were only 122, which is less than 0.5% of all doctors that would have left Canada to come to the U.S. And, in fact, there's a little bit of backflow now. In recent years, they've been seeing more people from the doctors in the U.S. coming to Canada to work. So it's really a trickle, if anything. To keep in mind that there are opportunities for training and subspecialties and so on that, U.S. is a much larger country than Canada. We only have 35 million people. And so there are some professional opportunities in the States, but people are not leaving in droves. And similarly, I don't know of a single one that's done that, although I do know some Canadian doctors that worked in the States that returned to Canada because they were sick of working in the States. But also, the question is, are patients, flooding over the border because they can't get any care in Canada? And they did take a look at that. There's an interesting article in Health Affairs that was It was about 10 years ago. But in any case, at that point, they looked at all the people, like, on the borders and trying to see, you know, they interviewed people and they checked to see in the registries, you know, did people really come over the border for all this care? And they went in the specialty places. And they found that maybe 20 out of 18,000 of the patients that they, you know, interviewed actually had left Canada to seek care in the U.S., which means, that, oh, you know, it's like 0.11%. It was like tiny. Would even do that sort of thing. And I personally know of maybe one person who sought care in the States, and it was for a gastroplasty or something that they didn't have available easily here. But really, most of the people I see that go to the U.S. are people who are traveling, you know, sun seekers, people who go in the winter, and they're often seniors, and they have to buy insurance in order to be able to travel in the States, and they complain bitterly about the insurance, and as soon as they get sick, they hightail it back to Canada as fast as they can.
That's funny. Could you talk to us about your lifestyle as a physician practicing in Canada?
Well, my lifestyle is, I have to say, it's quite lovely.
Wow.
No, I mean, I have my own office, so I can decide on how many hours I want to work, and the more I work, the more money I get, and the less I work, the less I get. But I can, I also participate in a number of committees for which I can get some payment, and so I work with other doctors, so I share the call, I share the hospital work. We cover for each other, we all take holidays and, you know, find people to cover for us, and basically, we love it because we get to see patients and do medicine, which is what we're all paid to do and what we train to do and what we want to do. And we all have lives. I don't know. I actually work as the head of the family practice department in the hospital, and one of my jobs is to interview people each year for their privileges. And I meet them, and I say, okay, you know, how's it going, Chris? And he goes, oh, great.
Well, Dr. Hendry, thank you so much for joining us today. Your conversation with you has been enlightening. We appreciate your information to set us right about some of the myths that we now can debunk. Well, we'd like to invite our audience to help us shape the conversation on healthcare reform on our future shows by emailing us your comments about healthcare reform to info@healthcareforalltexas or hcfat.org. Goodbye, and thank you for listening.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit kpft.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website at kpft.org. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Your feedback via social media is also welcome. We're at KPFT on Twitter and KPFT Houston on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces up next. You can view our complete program schedule at kpft.org. And thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on Pacifica Radio, 90.1 in Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
This is Bird Note. How do you get started learning to identify birds? There are so many, and they hardly sit still long enough for you to have a good look. Well, David Sibley, who literally wrote the book on identifying birds, has some advice.
Spend time at home, paging through the field guide, and at first, names like scoter and vireo and egret are going to seem strange and foreign, but by flipping through the pages of the book and looking at the pictures and reading the names, you'll start to get a sense of what those birds are, what makes a vireo.
From someone who's observed birds with great interest for years, here's a welcome note.
It doesn't have to be about seeing a lot of different species, but more about getting to know the birds that are common in your neighborhood or in your yard. It can be really rewarding at that level. Another thing that I think is incredibly useful for a beginning birder is to get in touch with a local nature center or Audubon chapter. Someone can take away all the uncertainty and say, yes, that's a song sparrow. Your first 25 or 50 species are the hardest ones to learn. So if you can find somebody who can help you with those, you'll have a really good